Okay, let me start by saying I want to talk about the SAS for a moment if I can. I can confirm that the New Zealand Special Air Services Task Group has arrived in Afghanistan. A group of 71 SAS personnel will be deployed in Afghanistan, although a slightly larger group has arrived in Afghanistan in the last few days, as they are required to help with the initial setup. In theatre, the New Zealand SAS Task Group comes under the control of the NATO International Security Assistance Force Commander. However, the Chief of the New Zealand Defence Force retains full command of our task group through a New Zealand SAS Commander in the field. I have been asked in the past about whether their operation would be limited to Afghanistan or also include Pakistan. I can confirm it will only be Afghanistan. As is the government's customary practice around issues involving the New Zealand SAS, I do not intend disclosing any more information than I've just given you. This week, the President of Hungary, in a few weeks, the President of Hungary will visit New Zealand. Actually, that's right, sorry, later in the week. His Excellency, Mr. Laszlo Schrom, will be in New Zealand between the 24th and 27th of September. New Zealand's links with Hungary date back to the 1950s, and the President's visit provides an important opportunity to build on our cooperation across education, science, investment, environment and cultural development. We are keen to work more closely with Hungary, particularly in research, science and technology. The President will be received in an official welcome by the Governor-General, and because I'm in the United Nations in New York, he will meet Acting Prime Minister Bill English. I just want to move, if I can, to adventure tourism. Over recent weeks, I've become aware of a number of concerning cases relating to the events in the adventure tourism sector, the latest being the riverboarding death of British backpacker Emily Jordan. In light of this, and a letter sent to me by Emily's father, Chris Jordan, I have instructed the Minister of Labour, Kate Wilkinson, to lead a cross-departmental investigation of the sector and report back on the current situation and ways to improve risk management and safety. I expect this review group to include Civil Aviation, Maritime New Zealand, the Ministry of Tourism, and the Tourism Industry Association, along with any other groups the department may identify as relevant. Tourism is critically important to New Zealand, and we must do all we can to ensure visitor safety. I expect the relevant ministers to present a joint report on the group's findings and suggest any changes they consider necessary. House will be back in session again this week. We'll be looking to make progress on the Domestic Violence Enhancing Safety Amendment Bill, the committee stages of the Immigration Bill, and first readings of other bills. On Wednesday is the 23rd of September, which is a Members' Day, and Thursday is likely to see the introduction of the amended emissions trading scheme. That's really about it for me.
Other countries have said where the special forces troops are operating. Can you say what province?
Look, I'm not prepared to say that. I have gone back and looked at comments made by other previous prime ministers, and no occasion have they mentioned exactly what province they're operating in. I think that's for operational reasons and safety reasons, probably the best place to leave it.
When did they leave?
They left Wednesday night or Thursday morning.
You're satisfied that the Karzai government was honestly elected and you're willing to support it?
Well, obviously I've seen the international commentary in relation to concerns about the election. I've said no direct advice myself that seeks to make any comment on that. And yes, we are supporting that administration as we seek to try and stabilise Afghanistan.
John Boscow is trying to draft public service snacking bill in hopes that it will push on the mission to change the staff will support it. What are his chances?
Well, it's the member's prerogative to choose to delay the bill if he wants to. That's really about it, the only comment I've got to make.
In the adventure tourism investigation, so are you, I mean, how far does this go? Is this going into a bunch of young people, jet boating, the whole sort of industry about adventure tourism?
Well, obviously the Ministry will need to go away and look at where there have been reported accidents or fatalities, investigate if there's a common theme here or whether it's related to particular operators or particular segments of the industry, and satisfy itself that we are operating at the right safety levels. Now, There have been one or two instances, and on the back of that, I felt it was necessary to go and have a look and make sure that we were satisfied and comfortable. That is possible in one or two cases, although I wouldn't want to speculate.
It is quite a risky business for people going in and jumping off cliffs and going down rivers. Don't you think there should be a certain acceptance of responsibility and risk by the people involved?
Yes, I mean, I think it's important that people understand if they engage in some of this activity, it can be risky. But it's also important that they are afforded the protection and care that we would expect to take place. And in the case of one or two of these instances, I'm just not absolutely satisfied that's been the case, and I just need to make sure that we're doing everything to preserve the reputation of the industry. It's important to New Zealand, and I made that clear actually to the Backpackers Association when I spoke to them on Friday in Auckland.
Did the letter you received raise doubts about the safety record in New Zealand?
Yes, it did. And
specific,
well, I mean, this is I think we need to put in the context of a grieving father who's lost his daughter, and it's not in isolation. He, in the letter, draws reference to other deaths that have taken place in New Zealand. I caution to add, I mean, it's my general view that the industry is safe, that a lot of people come here and engage in forms of adventure tourism, and there are always some risks involved. Some of those are just not controllable in every instance, but I think it's important that we just make sure that we are totally comfortable that, mm-hmm. that operators are carrying out all of the safety requirements we would expect of them.
Could the government go as far as shutting down operations if they were found to be negligent or dangerous?
We would, but I think the first port of call here is to identify whether the right safety standards have been set and then to identify whether they've been met.
Because presumably they're being policed at the moment. Are you saying they're not being policed well enough, perhaps?
That is the accusation in the letter. I just need to satisfy myself that the letter's incorrect.
I'm just going back to the essays. You said that the 71 are going to be about slightly
more.
Are you able to give us a number of counting more?
I don't even know myself. It's just slightly more the settlement.
How does that number compare to historic deployments there? Do we normally get that sort of level there at one time?
I can't give the answer there. I'm not sure, actually, but I can see my office can get that for you.
Does the timing of this mean that they're landing, you know, on the day that you fly out to America and you're going to be meeting Barack Obama, who effectively asked you to send them? Is that the reason that they're there now?
No.
But did you consider delaying the deployment until the outcome of the election was clear and whether or not there has actually been a fair and legal election there?
No. I mean, we made commitments to ISAF about when they would be in theatre, and that's been a planning process that's been underway now for 6 or 7 weeks of that sort of time frame, and this was the time they were always due to leave.
Have you seen any advice about the legitimacy of the elections?
I haven't received any advice, no.
But will you seek some?
Look, in due course, I'm sure MFAT will provide information to me as they have it to hand, and I've obviously seen the international commentary. I read the papers like everyone else, but I've not received any official advice that can corroborate any of the stories I've seen written in the papers.
Are you concerned that they could be seen to be propping up an illegitimate government? Because there are still quite serious questions about that.
No. I mean, I think New Zealanders will see the deployment of the SAS to Afghanistan in the same way that other forces are there, which is this is a historical hotbed of terrorism, a place where we're trying to stabilise that environment so that our operational forces in Bamiyan are hopefully in a safer operation or safer location, but then ultimately that control can be wrestled back in Afghanistan from the Taliban.
Are you confident that the systems are in place for New Zealand troops to blow the whistle if they're concerned that detainees that they're handing over to the Afghani troops are being tortured?
Yes, and I've received verbal assurances from the Afghan government that anyone that we hand over will be treated humanely and under the Geneva Convention.
But has anything changed from our previous deployments in that respect? Because it seems that perhaps procedures weren't in place for concerned soldiers at that point to raise concerns about torture.
My understanding is that there have been changes post those earlier documented stories back in, I think it was 2001 or 2002, back in that time. There have been some changes, and they've been in place for some time. We'll be operating under the same conditions that the deployment in 2005 operated under.
Have you had any discussions with the government in Britain where there's increasing concern about the casualties that the British forces are suffering there?
No, I haven't. Although, again, I note those and recognise that this is a dangerous environment. The Italians lost six people last week. That is the very real risk that our people face. And it wasn't a easy decision to send them to Afghanistan, but I believe it's the right decision.
You're prepared to suffer New Zealand casualties for a government whose legitimacy is in doubt?
Well, the aim here is to try and stabilise Afghanistan. And I think the alternative is that we are left with a country where control is ceded to the Taliban, where it's in all probability more terrorist activities will be planned and schemes will be hatched. And I don't believe that's in the world's best interest.
Minister, how long is the government going to allow the ETS to get selected?
I don't know. I mean, it's when it comes in on Thursday, it'll be sent to select committee from there. I imagine it'll be a number of weeks, but at this stage, I don't have to hand how long it'll be at the select committee.
Will there be a regulatory impact statement to accompany the legislation?
Again, I can't answer that question, but that is always our preference if that's the case.
And is the finality now of the Māori Party on the issues which need legislative clauses?
Well, we have support to send it to the select committee. I'm confident that we'll enjoy the support of the Māori Party right through to it being passed into law, and I look forward to introducing into legislation an emissions trading scheme that balances our environmental responsibilities with our economic opportunities.
But are those negotiations with the Māori Party now complete?
Well, there'll always be further negotiations because, you know, ultimately you'll go to the select committee and that's where certain ideas and concepts will be tested. But in broad principle, we have agreement with the Māori Party.
Gordon Brown is the first leader to confirm to go to Copenhagen and then the climate change conference. In the light of that, do you have any plans to go?
No, it's not my intention to go. Certainly Tim Brace will be going and leading the negotiations, and in all probability Nick Smith will also be attending.
And on your trip, there's been some suggestion that New Zealand would be offering to host a non-proliferation meeting next year. Is it just officials or a high-level political meeting?
That's likely just to be officials from a number of countries around the world. At this stage, it hasn't been finalised, but if it takes place, it'll be in the early part of 2010.
And how important will non-proliferation be in the speech of the UN?
It takes up a portion of the first part of the speech, really just talking about New Zealand's credentials in this area, our long-term and ongoing commitment to stay nuclear-free, and the importance of that issue to other countries around the world.
Prime Minister, how can you be kept in sort of an update of what's going on over there and how the troops are going? Will it be weekly, daily?
Yeah, I mean, I already receive fairly regular briefs, as and when required. Otherwise, it's on a more sort of formalised basis, but as and when required, if there's something unusual, then I would expect that to be the case.
How do you prepare yourself for possibly having to ring some of this family and say, yeah, we've lost one of the doors over here?
Well, I think that's a risk that you face when you're Prime Minister in any situation. It's no different when the tragedy of losing Len Sneers, the police officer who was acting to try and protect New Zealand citizens. We've had it with firefighters. I think when someone goes into the armed services, there's always a risk, and probably a heightened risk when it comes to the SAS. It's my hope that no one will be injured, and certainly it's my grave hope that there'll be no fatalities, but that's something that you can't rule out. It's a dangerous environment.
Would you be making any fatalities or casualties publicly?
That would be my intention. Yes, I would.
Are they self-equipped or are they having to borrow equipment off other forces over there?
They're self-equipped and I've personally inquired as to whether they are satisfied that they have all of the equipment they need, and the advice I've had on numerous occasions I've asked that question, the answer is they're very satisfied with all the equipment they've got and there's nothing else they would want.
Roughly what proportion of the SAS does that represent?
I'm just not in a position to comment on that.
As far as process changes regarding whistleblowing and torture, will you be notified that soldiers have concerns? And
Well, I guess I would be, but there's a very clear understanding of the way that anyone that is handed over to the Afghan forces would be treated. and that is humanely and in line with the Geneva Convention.
And what sort of time frame is your woman being there? I mean, is this a one and only deployment, or will there be rotations like that?
Well, I think I indicated earlier they'd like to be there for 12 to 18 months. Now, there may be people coming in and out in that time frame, but that's the time scale that they're likely to be in Afghanistan.
And will they all operate in the same area, or will they be dispersed across various places?
I can't answer that question because I just don't know myself, actually. It will depend on the missions they go on.
Have you talked to Bill English in the last few days about the renewed interest on the housing issue?
Not overly. I mean, from time to time we have discussions, but nothing in great detail.
Has there been any consideration for him just ditching the allowance and just make the thing over?
Well, that hasn't been a discussion because, in my view, he's fully compliant with the rules that operate. And it's been my belief that he always has been. I accept that to some people it will look as though he is more Wellington-based than based in his electorate. But that's a function of the fact he's been here for a long time. If we were fortunate enough to be a very long-term government, other ministers that are relocating their families and unifying them here in Wellington would also look like in the same position that Bill English is in. That is the very nature of why families come to Wellington. They go to school, they get jobs. Well, he maintains a house in his electorate. He doesn't rent that house, as is the rules dictate. It's no different from any of the other ministers that have moved down here.
But what if he's here, living here with his family for another 10 years? I mean, even though he maintains a house in Dipton, isn't the whole principle of the thing not about a chattel that you've got in another part of the country, but your living circumstances? And at what point does he become a Wellington-based MP if he's here for 20 years with his family?
Well, they are the rules that operate. And the rules are that if you maintain a property in your electorate, that property is not rented, then your electorate is not in the Greater Wellington boundary, you're not deemed to be a Wellington-domiciled Member of Parliament. Bill English is in no different position to, say, Phil Heatley, who these days lives in Wellington with his family.
Do you think that's damaged his credibility as Finance Minister?
I don't. My view is that there's always a general level of dissatisfaction in the public with the benefits that MPs get. I acknowledge that and I accept that. We're doing our best to try and get a bit more clarity and at least tidy those rules up. It was always going to be the case with greater transparency that would be the situation, but there's nothing new here. And in the case of Mr. English, you know, he has been fully compliant with the rules. For those that argue he'd have a moral obligation, well, you know, he paid any excess back even though he wasn't required to.
Is it your view that he'll be able to 30,000 allowance next year when he comes in?
That's right.
Why is that? Because he doesn't own the property.
Well, because he stayed, the test is whether he stayed in the same property he was in while he was not in government.
Does it make it harder for him to breach this?
I don't think so. As I say, the rules are never perfect, and you can make the same case around quite a number of the rules that are in operation around MPs. Now, they are what they are. It's short of going to a full cash allowance and no other entitlements. There's always going to be some debate over these issues.
Couldn't you argue, though, that he's only in the position of being complied with the rules because that's a position he's actively put himself into?
Well, that's factually incorrect. It's a statement.
Just on the adventure tourism thing, have operators, as well as this barter, have actual operators come to you with some concerns about some of the practices that go on in the industry?
I haven't heard it from operators, although there was no pushback when I've raised it with the industry before that I have some concerns. And certainly you will be aware if you do some research that the death of Emily Jordan's not the first death in adventure tourism in New Zealand. Now, as I said to you, I think we need to put some context around this. It's an industry where a lot of people participate, and for the vast overwhelming bulk, yeah, they have a pleasurable, if not exhilarating, experience, and they're totally fine. But the industry is premised on the fact that notwithstanding it's a venture tourism, they also, it's very important that safety is protected. And I believe it could damage our industry if we don't make sure we're meeting those very high standards. And it's, I think it's incumbent upon me, both as the Minister of Tourism, but also as Prime Minister, to protect New Zealand's international reputation.
It's a huge industry though, isn't it? And, and adventure tourism, particularly like in Queenstown, for example. Are you concerned that even saying you're going to review this is going to send a signal that it's not safe to do these things in New Zealand?
If it was misreported, but I think also equally, you know, I can't sit back and do nothing when there's been a few deaths.
Is it mainly in the South Island that you're concerned? Is it Queenstown as the heart of adventure tourism in New Zealand?
I wouldn't want to isolate one particular location or one particular area. I think we just need to make sure that we are satisfied and that all the relevant government agencies are satisfied that we have the appropriate safety standards. You'd be relieved to know I don't write all of them.
Do they consult you about the top 10 that you're going to have to rig out?
No. I don't even know what the topic is, but I can probably guess.
So you're not even going to be interviewed by them? They might just make...
That's the way I normally see the top 10 work, yeah.
Well, this is your guess.
Yeah. Well, I assume 10 reasons to come to New Zealand would be my guess, but I don't know. The 10 reasons on why the New Zealand Press Gallery are so wonderful. On that happy note, bon voyage.